Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by, you thought your grandma has technical difficulties, Danielle Caroli.
How are you, John?
I'm doing well. How are you, Grandma? I mean, Danielle?
Well, you know, sending Zoom links to the wrong person, thinking I can see who I'm typing to, and didn't work out. But that's fine, because thank goodness you can unsend messages. We will have no accidental guests appearing in this episode.
Well, that's good. Yeah, hopefully nobody sends you any emails in your current state saying that they're the prince of a long lost city under the sea.
Oh, yeah, funny you should mention that. I just got an email from this little old lady in Cambodia who needs help claiming her husband's inheritance in the United States. She just needs me to buy a bunch of gift cards and send them to her, and then she's going to send it all to me.
Sounds like the person that tried to hack into my debit card.
How fun.
How are you doing? Everything good?
Everything is good. We are moving some goats, cutting down numbers, which is always good. Still have a few to sell. Yeah, it's going well here. How's it going for you?
Well, interesting last couple of days for the farm. We almost ended up with an earless goat or elf-eared goat.
So, yeah. Almost. You almost had to find a couch to sleep on, too.
Oh, I almost needed a new zip code, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to support the shows, and there was this cute little experimental kid at the Son of a Buck Show Donut Edition this past weekend, and I was like, oh, I'll put in some raffles for it. It'll be fine. I don't win anything. It's great. Well, I won. So I was like, hey, Tierney, I want a kid in a raffle. And she's like, what'd you win? And she's like, it better have ears. And I was like, ha, funny story. It kind of does, technically, but it doesn't. So she didn't like that because La Mancha's, sorry, guests that are listening in right now, freak her out, and she thinks they're aliens, and she doesn't like them. So I tried smoothing that over. Didn't work. So they re-raffled off the dough, and now she's at a home that will appreciate her beauty for what she is.
A beautiful end to that story.
It is. It is. And, you know, maybe I should just go play lotto instead of raffle.
Right. Exactly.
So, and then I sold a kid too, so we're going to be down another doe kid, so that's exciting, and we have only a couple weeks until our last doe kids, and we're done. So, yeah, we're just kind of trucking along. How are you?
Good. I have a funny story in that and it's semi-related to just being a dairy goat farmer. So I was at work the other day, and it was 9:30 in the morning, and I get a text from my aunt asking if I had left my house yet. I typically leave my house by 6 in the morning, but that's besides the point. She was just probably hoping I was working from home or something like that. And so through the conversation, realized that her daughter's prom was that evening. And she needed somebody to do her daughter's makeup and was asking me to do her makeup. And I kind of had a moment of panic because I do have a lot of, like, I do get ready every morning before I go to work in my office at the barn because this way I don't have to drive home before I go into town. And so it just saves me about 35 minutes of travel time in the morning. And so I do have basics, but my office is very low key, chill. So I don't have much in terms of it. I have my basic BB cream, didn't even have a foundation, just had my BB cream, my eyeliner, my mascara, blush and bronzer, but nothing crazy. Like this is a 5 minute makeup routine. And
Totes, sister,
you,
totes.
yeah, I know you're totally relating to this right now,
Oh yeah, I'm
but
not checking out at all.
you're just like, oh, here we go. But so I'm like, I
Okay.
don't have anything, but I was like, can I go home on my lunch break and bring stuff back? No, she wanted to do it on my lunch break, which works out because then I can get it done and I didn't have to miss any work for it. But I'm like, all right, please just bring what you have. I need setting spray. I need eyeshadows because thank God that makeup is not as crazy as it used to be when I was in high school. But
What?
in terms of like, total tangent on this tangent, but they do a much more minimal, like, there's a much more minimal palette of makeup going on. It's a much more natural look than the, can your conceal, can your foundation match, does it match and blend into your jawline that was going on when I was in high school? How much eyeliner can you put on? It's not quite a thing anymore. So
Okay,
thank
okay.
God. So I was able to do like kind of a natural palette. But where this all ties in is, so she brought her eyeshadow palette, and so she brings me all this stuff, and I look at her and I say, where are the brushes for the eyeshadow? Well, of course, she had forgotten the brushes. And so I'm like, all right, we'll make this work. So I start doing my cousin's makeup and we're doing it, and I get to the eyeshadow part of it. And I'm like, I'm at my barn. There's got to be something here that I can use. Like, what do I have? And I mean, I could have used my fingers. Like, I could have made it work in different ways, but I'm like, I have this full med kit. What do I have here? Well, then I realized that in my AI kit, I have these giant cotton Q-tips that are used for kind of clearing the mucus in a dough when you're AIing her. And let me just say, they worked really well to put eyeshadow on as well.
What? So why were you like, I thought the parents pay like $1 million for these kids to go to prom these days. Like, why were you the makeup person?
Because I don't think they do anymore.
Oh,
I think it's a
I
much
mean, that's cool.
more, at least around at this prom, I think it was a much more relaxed thing. I mean, limos are no longer a thing anymore. I think it's just it's more of just a high school dance where they get dressed up. I'm not going to go into, I don't know the, I'm speaking completely just conjecture, but that's what we're going to go with.
Okay, well, that's cool. You get to break out your AI kit for
I
the
know. I was
dinner.
like, oh, these will work. Sorry. I'm like, do you want me to tell you what I'm using right now, or do you want me to just not tell you what I'm
Well,
using?
it's not like you were using a used straw
Well,
or
that's what I
something.
was
It's
like. No, I
fine.
was like, don't worry, they haven't been used yet. You're,
Tucks them back into her. You're
yeah,
gonna have a goat
exactly.
that's
Save
got
them for
some
later.
pink.
We're gonna have some
Yeah.
sparkles on somebody's cervix this fall.
Exactly. Well, that's good. That's fun.
But
That's,
yeah, I
get
was like,
to
you know,
work
you're
out
a
your.
farm person when.
Exactly. I'm gonna need you to teach me your ways when Alice gets of age.
Okay, yes, if all else fails, I can fall back on my makeup skills and become a makeup artist.
Just so everybody knows, that's, and Alice, future Alice listening to this, that's 32. Okay.
Yeah.
Daniel, do we have any Adkin news going on this week that I might have missed?
I think it's all quiet from what I've heard or haven't heard. And so I think they're just trucking along.
Well, I guess we should just introduce our guests then. Guys, it's that time of year, so some of us, like our guests, were in show whites before they could walk. Others started in the goat world a little bit later, like me.
and I have a chance to learn showmanship in 4-H as I was growing up. Regardless, we are all entering the ring for the first time this year, and we want to present our goats to their best advantage. As we start to clip those does, pull out our show weights, and pack that trailer, it's also important to discuss how we show off those beauties as well. So today, we are talking with two absolutely fabulous showmen who will take us all to school and give us a refresher on how we should be showing our goats in the ring. When we were talking about guests for this episode, we thought, who better to have on to talk about showing goats than Faith and Hope Hitch? These two have been lighting it up in the show ring for years under their Shady Lawn Herd name, competing at the national level and earning many accolades along the way. They're both masters at their craft, and we can't wait to dive in with this topic. So welcome to the show, Faith and Hope Hitch.
Hello. It's an incredible experience to be on here, and we're very appreciative to be asked from you guys to join this podcast.
Yeah, it was a no-brainer. I mean, it was like I've witnessed your guys' skills. You both are excellent at what you do. But for those that are listening that may not know who you are, can you tell us about your background in dairy goats and your experiences with showmanship?
Yeah, so I'll speak on my behalf because I know Hope has her own experience with it as well. As you said, we show under the herd name Shady Lawn Farm, which is, as of right now, mostly recorded grades, which if you were to tell us that, you know, 10 years ago, absolute disbelief, but it's primarily recorded grades, but we have La Manchas, Alpines, and we dabble into other breeds. We've had every other breed except Guernseys, so that's something else, but it started back when in the late 1970s with my mom and my grandfather, who simply, they had dairy cattle and wanted to start out into dairy goats. So my mom and my grandfather bought their first goat, which was a Nubian, and it's been a journey ever since. My mom won her first showmanship at Nationals, which was her first appearance at a Nationals at 9. And then it progressed into Alpines and La Manchas. My grandfather took over the Alpines, my mom and my dad, and us, the La Manchas, and we had, you know, used the same herd name for both. And then when my grandfather passed away, we took on the Alpines, and that's kind of how the grades trickled down. But as you said, we were putting whites before we could even walk. It's been an experience. I have a picture of us, or as of me, when I was probably 2-3 years old with my, as you would say, heart doe, when she was a yearling and she was taller than I was. But we've attended numerous national shows. And within that, in my, you know, on my own, like I said, I want Hope to have her own time to speak here on her experiences. But I would say we've shown in the youth level 7 different national, showmanship, youth activities. And within those, I've placed within the top 5 each time. And, you know, wow. The other youth activities, I've placed pretty well, not as well, but have, you know, held my own, or at least tried to. And we've had success in the open, you know, within the past couple years. We've had reserve national best setter, been 2 times premier recorded grade exhibitor, premier recorded grade breeder, numerous, you know, premier youth does, and multiple times premier youth exhibitors. And so it's been a huge honor to have been able to get to that point and been able to have that success. Because as you said, we were born into this, and a lot of people don't get that opportunity to do so. And so being able to come from a background and have parents and grandparents who already kind of started that legacy and pushed us into it really, really has provided us with this outlook that not many people get to have. And like I said, that's just an amazing thing in itself. But I'll let Hope go ahead and take over her side of it, so I don't, you know, talk your guys' ear off.
I think Faith did cover most of it, but I'll talk about some of my experiences. So I mean, obviously I don't remember, but I see pictures. Me and Faith's very first goat show we attended was actually the Kentucky State Fair when we were less than 2 months old. And there's pictures floating around somewhere of me and her in our car seats, and how many people told us we looked like, you know, fake dolls because we were too little to attend. And I think it's been going uphill since then, you know. I know every year we attend at least multiple shows, and it's hard to think about anything different when, you know, people talk about their childhood and how they were raised. This to us is like it's home, you know. The dairy goat industry, the people there have felt like family. And, you know, like Faith, I have not placed as high, I think, in showmanship as Faith. I think she's kind of won that over. But I think I've placed top 10, and then in recent years I've placed top 5, but it's definitely a learning experience, and it's a great industry to be raised in. And, you know, when people say that they are just now being introduced to it into adulthood, I think, I mean, that's an amazing, but I think back to, you know, being able to be raised in it, and it's definitely something different.
Yes, this is in your blood. And I think it kind of definitely shows when you both walk into the ring and are showing off your animals, and it shows in those showmanship classes as well. When you both walk into the ring, you are showing your doe off to her best advantage. And that's just a phrase I really love from the scorecard. And to start off this topic of how we can show off our does and really have them show well and not focus on showmanship in terms of what's your knowledge base in that open show ring, you're never going to get quizzed. How many points is general appearance? Those kind of things. But I think it is a good place to start of talking about how or what does showing off a doe to her best advantage mean to both of you?
Yeah, so that's simply something that I think can't, I guess, necessarily been like be talked about like in one sentence. Mm-hmm. Showing your doe off to the best advantage is a big thing when you walk into the show ring. And I guess if I put it in simple terms, it's knowing the strengths and disadvantages of your doe, and knowing that, you know, a lot of people who are coming into this as newcomers, they don't necessarily have the experience, and they, you know, may not show the same way that an experienced, you know, showman does. And so I think that when you show them to their best advantage, you know, their qualities, you know, their disadvantages, you know, say that they are on level over the top line, you know, you are able as a showman, as a breeder, able to look at that goat and be like, okay, when I walk in the ring, that's the fault that the judge is going to look at. And how will I be able to maybe make it look less of a fault and highlight the qualities of that doe? And it's in a whole nother context. It's realizing that, you know, obviously you want the person who has the doe to show them. Absolutely. You know, they've bought them, they've raised them, they've put all this money and time into it. But on some terms, if, you know, you decide to go to the national level, and if you realize that perhaps you don't have, you know, the advantage in showing, then perhaps that, you know, you could find someone who can show you how to do it, or maybe even allow them to show your animal. And I'm not coming on here and saying that you should hand off every doe you have, because like I said, getting to that national level and having the ability to say you got there is a huge, huge thing. But like I said, a huge thing is knowing the advantages and disadvantages of your goat, and knowing how to highlight those. And I don't necessarily want to say hide, but, you know, the people out there who show goats know that the faults, sometimes you want to hide them. And so it's kind of being able to maneuver around that and being able to see how to make that happen in the show ring.
Well, as like, if a new person listening to this is hearing you say that, and they hear you say, well, just, you know, show her off to her best advantage and try to hide that stuff, they're probably thinking, well, how am I going to do that if I'm walking her around in a circle? So is there, when you guys are maneuvering around that ring, are there certain things that you're doing to try to mitigate the flaws? You know, is there anything that you can think of, like for maybe like poor front end or hockiness that you can do to show them off to their best advantage and maneuver them around the ring?
Yeah, absolutely. And this will be something that we'll also touch on a little bit later when we have, you know, tips and whatnot. But certainly, I think the biggest thing is walking slow. And I know that's something that a lot of people are like, you know, coming into this new, they're like, what the heck, you know, walking slow, you know, walking slow with the head raised, being graceful in what you do. If you have a doe, you know, who is hockey when you set them up, able to turn those pasterns out. And I know that that's something that some people, you know, frown upon, because when you're on the move, you know, that's going to come out. You're going to see that doe is hockey. But I think that, you know, you have a doe that's not level across the top line, finding the correct spot on her top line that she's maybe high in, and being able to tickle or pinch or squat, whatever the term you may use, how to do that, what exact place to do it. And it all comes back, again, knowing the advantages and disadvantages of your goat. But even in the show ring, you know, even in the open show, you know, sometimes you don't stare at the judge as long as you would in showmanship, you know, the eye contact, whatever, that isn't there. But you still maintain that gracefulness, that walking slow, having the doe's head raised high, walking in pace with her, you know, ensuring that she's not walking ahead of you, or he, you know, buck. Like making sure they're not walking ahead of you, that they're not pulling you, or that you're dragging them or whatnot. And, you know, when you're setting them up, you just have to know your goat, know what you can work on, how you can work on them, you know, whether that's tickling them down, correcting their front legs, you know, placing them a little bit wider if they have, you know, not much width between the front end, you know, just kind of going back, looking at the scorecard, seeing how much those points really mean to the judge and how they'll affect your placement.
Yeah, absolutely. Hope, can we talk about leg placement? Like, how do you stack your goat's front legs and their back legs as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So for me personally, it just depends on the goat. The front legs on almost all the goats should be similar. The front legs should be parallel to the withers, and the width is dependent on the width of the chest floor. And that being said, you don't want to put them not too far apart, not too close. I usually say hand width, like hand length between the front legs, but obviously that's going to depend on how wide your doe is. For rear leg placement, it is largely based on the doe. Typically, the rear legs are parallel to the pin bones and width. On mature does, it's based on the width of the rear udder. And this is another thing, kind of showing the doe off to the best of its advantage. If a doe does have a smaller udder and not as much width, you want to place legs closer together so you can therefore showcase the mammary system that the doe has, even if it isn't as large. And placing those rear legs further apart does put your animal at a disadvantage, because it's kind of showcasing that fault and making the judge see that there's not as much, you know, capacity and production there. And the side view should be the equivalence of the fore udder and the rear udder. And it's kind of that third, third, and third rule. You see 1/3 of the udder from the front of the legs, 1/3 behind, and 1/3 at the back.
Well said. And if they don't have a mammary system, if they're a junior doe, how does that back placement or the back feet placement change for you guys? And does it depend on the doe kid, if she's more narrow or if she's wider?
Yeah, so this is something that we're kind of controversial with, like, between our family. I know I do it different from Faith, and Faith does it different from my mother. So I might let Faith talk on this after I get done. But for me, it's definitely dependent on how wide the kid is, you know, how wide the discussion is. And for me, I tend to do the same on a kid and a dry yearling. I just set them, like, it's not obviously not too close and not too far apart. I know a lot of people like to spread them wide apart, but if you have a narrow kid, you also do want to set them wide to kind of not put them at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I'll touch on that a little more. When you are in the show ring and you see other people show, a lot of people love to place, you know, the rear legs wide apart, whether or not they do have a wide discussion. And it's them trying to show that off, or let the judge see that maybe, you know, they're wide in the discussion. But I think that for us, we kind of place the legs, I would say about a foot apart in the rear legs. We're not big on placing them real wide apart, especially if you have a hockey kid. Placing the rear legs wide apart, that just almost highlights a little bit more because they're not able to, I would say, hold themselves on the ground. And so they're trying to, with that width that's not natural to them, they're trying to hold their feet on the ground and they're slipping. So their hocks come back in. And I've seen it look good on a couple kids and a couple dry yearlings, but for ourselves, I would say that it's about a foot apart in the rear legs.
No, I think it just from seeing people setting up their does in the ring, and obviously when you in theory, if you have a milker, and this goes for youth or adults too, you usually started out with a kid. So you have a kid that you've shown, you've had a dry yearling that you've shown, then you have your milker, 2-year-old. So you've kind of had a little bit more experience with that. But the udder kind of gives them a placeholder for that, to where to put the legs, that they can kind of go, okay, I don't need to spread those legs too wide because the udder's there, and that kind of helps them and guides them. But sometimes with the kids, you just see people trying to make that escutcheon as big as possible. And so they're spreading those legs too wide. And like you both said, it does kind of not necessarily benefit the doe. And so there definitely is a fine balance there.
Yeah, absolutely. As you stated, you know, I think when you put so much width between it, it looks unnatural, and it really puts the kid or the yearling at a disadvantage. And with milkers, they have that mammary system that you can place the rear legs around it, and it gives them kind of that foothold on where to place them, you know, the like I said, correct placement of it. And with kids, it's kind of a guessing game, especially for people who don't necessarily understand, you know, correct feet and leg placement. And so that, I think that's a huge, huge thing, because even on the scorecard, feet, legs, and pasterns on a junior doe is a big category. And so, you know, especially, you know, you have a dry yearling or a kid that you're bringing in and you put them at a disadvantage in that category, it really knocks down placings. Even if on the move, perhaps they're, you know, have a good set of feet and legs, just having them set up like that really not only messes with their, you know, their feet and legs, but even their back at some point. So I think it's a huge thing to practice, to understand the correct placement of it, and just kind of observe what other people are doing and the placements behind it.
There was a trick that I'll say that mom made us do when we were younger, when we wouldn't place the rear legs correctly on the goat. She bought me and Faith a mirror, and we would set up our goats in front of that mirror and, you know, help practice on it. It's dependent on the type of goat, but we would take the different types of does that we had, and we would go and we would set up the rear legs based on how they look in front of the mirror, because obviously it's a different point of view when you set them up from where you're at and what it looks like on the judge's side. I'll talk about an experience that I had. It was at last year's nationals, and it was in senior showmanship, and it was a really, really long class. And they had a switch does, and I had a doe that was a little bit of a different style than the ones that I'm used to. And this kind of shows where even the experience that I have, that I'm still not, you know, fully experienced. I had a doe that was very, very sharp, very fine boned, and she had a very wide rear udder. And I set her up the way that I thought she should be set up. You know, I thought she looked really good. And the judges were going around asking questions, and the judge grabbed the goat and he said, "I want you to look at how this goat's set up." And, you know, I had her set up the way I had her set up the entire of when I had her. And I stepped back and I looked at her, and the rear leg placement was completely wrong. I mean, I had been walking around this whole showmanship class with my goat's legs so off. And it's just, it's one of those things where you have to practice. And if you do get a doe, like you're helping someone out show, it is more challenging, especially when you have a doe that's not, you know, the same style, maybe doesn't have the same memory that your does have. But I think the rear leg set is definitely something that you have to learn, and it's definitely a learning experience.
Absolutely. Practice makes perfect, that's for sure. All right, guys, what about
pace, because let me tell you, we'll get into pet peeves, but I don't like it when I'm walking my goats at a normal pace and I got people nipping at my heels. So what's a normal pace for all those people out there that are entering the show ring for the first time?
Yeah, and this is, I think a lot of people who come into the dairy industry that are per se new, or even, you know, the experienced ones, what they had beforehand was market animals. And so you see a lot of people who come into the dairy goat industry and start off showing while getting incredibly fast pace. And it's, you know, it correlates with market animals. You walk fast to show off the muscle. With dairy goats, that's absolutely not what you want to show off. And so finding a balance in between, you know, the knowledge of market animals and dairy animals, it's really hard. It's really hard for some people. But I think a good pace, you know, outside of showmanship, they go incredibly slow. And so in the open show, I think it's, I wouldn't say a super, super slow walk, but it's, you're not trying to get anywhere fast anytime soon, you know. You walk with the pace of the animal. And like I said, you don't let them pull ahead of you. So it's walking in stride with them. I would say your legs are in stride with their front legs. Certainly not fast, you know, especially with, among all dairy goats, but especially with milkers, people who are, you know, walking fast, with those who are full, it's hiding the mammary system. It's putting those does at a disadvantage. And then, you know, you're up the butt of the doe in front of you. You have a huge space between you and the doe behind you. It's just, it's not a good thing. So I would say that if you're a first time person coming into this and, you know, you decided to walk into the show ring for the first time, go in behind someone that you know has been in the show ring a couple times and go at the pace they're going. Make sure that your doe is not right up on the doe in front of you and the doe behind you isn't right up on you. So that shows that you're going, you know, at a proportionate pace that highlights your animal, highlights their mammary system if they have one, you know, and highlights their general appearance, whatever it may be. Walking fast certainly does put those goats at a disadvantage.
I want to jump right in there and then I'll kick it back to Hope too, because I think what you said is really, really true. And I just think about an experience where I was at ringside and somebody took their doe, and she was an older doe. She won grand champion, and she's an excellent show person, and showed this doe off to grand champion. The judge checked her tattoos, and she was leaving the ring, and she was running her doe across the ring, and the judge pulled her aside later and was like, "Do not ever run that doe again," because, and in a, not that sounds horrible, but like in a, like, just FYI, when you ran that doe, her crops, which for people that aren't necessarily familiar are right behind the withers, and it's kind of that movement area, and a lot of times we'll say they're weak in the crops, and there's, you can sometimes almost put your hand in the crop area and it's not good, but her crops were just so, the weakness in those crops was so prevalent. And when you're walking a doe at this natural pace, it just smooths that crop area out. And that's something you can see as you're handling that animal up above them as well. And so I just think that's keeping a pace that'll make them walk elegantly is just so, so important, and will show them off to their best advantage and hide kind of those flaws in the mobility.
Yeah, kind of with what you and Faith had said, it definitely, walking them fast paced definitely puts the animal at a disadvantage. You know, as you're moving at the slow pace, it allows the judge to like to see the strengths of your goat and be able to assess them fairly. And as well as, the judge is going to be focused on how the goat tracks on their feet and legs and how well they can move around that mammary system. And those two being the highest points on the scorecard, if you were to, you know, take those away, it would definitely put your doe down at a lower placing. And as you said, like, even after you leave the show ring, it definitely, you know, the judge puts that animal up and, you know, says that that's the best animal. in within that breed or maybe within the whole show, and then you then represent that goat in a bad way, it definitely will look poorly on the goat as well as the judge, I think.
Well, when you're trying to show off the goat to its best advantage, and you're, trying not to walk her too fast, trying to set her up right. The one thing that you always see is obviously anybody is trying to figure out if you need to pinch her down, is she level when you're setting her up? And you guys mentioned a mirror, so I'm sure that's going to come into play here. When you're pinching them down, how often are you doing so? And when is it too much?
Again, I feel like a huge thing within showmanship is knowing your animal, and showmanship is very, very individualistically based on each goat. You can't tickle down or pinch or squat, whatever terminology you use. You can't tickle a doe down on in the same spot as you would the next doe you show, unless you just have that consistent of a herd, But when you look at a goat, the goat you're showing, I say look at the highest place. You want a doe that's uphill. And so, you come down from the neck into the withers uphill. And so you want, uphill from the withers, and then you're going down, and that's where you want it to start leveling out. If you find a spot in that area that's high, or you have a doe that, not really slopes, but isn't level across that rump or in the chine or in the loin, it's finding that spot and tickling them down to ensure that, assisting in making sure they're level per se. Again, how often you tickle them down dependent on the goat. If you have a board level goat, I have one in my barn that I show, and I've fallen into the trap of tickling her down too much, and that puts her at a disadvantage, and oftentimes it makes her sway backed, and that is not something you want to show off in a doe, especially one that's that level. So, say you have a doe that's board level, you may have the tendency, once or twice or three times on the ring just to slightly, touch down on her back. But at that point, it's really something that you leave alone. After you set them up, they may be raised in the top line somewhere, and you tickle them down. But like I said, it depends on every goat. If they're, high in the loin, and it causes their rump to be, sloped, you tickle them down right on the hips to level out that top line. You have one that's a little higher in between the loin and the chine, that's where you tickle them down. So it comes back to assessing your goat, knowing your goat, knowing, if she's at fault on her top line, how severe it is and how not severe it is. And making sure you're not overshowing your doe or undershowing. Both are a really, really big thing in terms of showmanship.
Yeah, and I feel like Faith touched on the majority of it, but something that I've noticed as an exhibitor and also someone who's just sitting outside the ring, kind of observing, other exhibitors, especially this past weekend when I had the chance to go down to Louisiana, I did notice that exhibitors aren't as gentle as they could be when tickling down the back. And I think that's a very important thing to be, is to be gentle within anything, but especially when tickling down the back, because back and rump are also on the scorecard and is within general appearance, which is a very high thing on the scorecard. And whenever you tickle down your goat's back too rough, and that ends up, it could mess up the representation of their neck to their withers to their rump, not even just their back. But you're putting your goat at fault with all those things. So I think that's also a big thing. As I talked about before, about looking in the mirror and practicing, I think this is also a thing that you could practice with. Say you have a herd that's maybe not as consistent, and you have does that are high in the loin, one's high in the chine, and once, maybe high just right in front of the hips. I think it's a good thing to get out in front of a mirror and practice on those goats and see what looks best.
No, it's all very true. And the other thing with that is how often you should be pinching them down, because so often I think we overdo it. They're standing still, we're anxious in the show ring, and so we're just going to go. Are you calling yourself out? Because I was not going to call you out, but.
I think we both know that I have a terrible propensity to want to just fidget in the ring. So yeah, it's fine. You can call me out. I know what I am.
But it's going back and doing it again and again and again. And if you find yourself constantly pushing down, or your hand is basically there, you're doing it too much. You want your hand to be back closer to your body at rest while you are keeping that dough in, if she's in a side-by-side line or a head-to-tail line. You don't want to be constantly doing that. I mean, obviously the dough will adjust and she'll kind of start to unlevel herself. It does get to the point of distraction, or from a judge's perspective, if your hand is constantly there, I'm going to know you're hiding.
No, the hand fact. Hides it all. You can't see it. If you can't see anything, it's fine.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, when we're going in the ring, you see these people that are maybe pinching them down a little bit too much, but often that's because maybe they're not working with their animals as much as they should be. So how often should someone that maybe not showing at a national level, but at a local club level, like how often should they be working with their does before a show and, you know, trying to get them looking their best and acting their best? Like, how often should somebody be doing that, Hope?
This is definitely a tricky question for, I think, us specifically. We don't work with our does as much as we should before a show, but I will say our genetics do help with our goat's dispositions, and we definitely don't keep any that have a bad one. But I would say for those going into, you know, going into like a club show or someone who hasn't done it as much, I think it's a good thing to, even if you just walk your kids maybe 2-3 times a week leading up weeks before the show, I think that makes a big difference. I know for us, even whenever we just take our doe kids or yearlings out to take pictures, you know, walking them from the kid barn all the way to the driveway helps, you know, have the kid adjust to the collar. You know, when you send them up for those pictures, it's good to see how their legs are placed, or how they may react to their legs being touched, and see if you have to practice more with them. And obviously it depends for, you know, every kid, and even some mature does are like that. But I'd say the more you work with them and the more experience that your does or bucks or kids have in the show ring, it will definitely enhance how well they stand, you know, for the exhibitor. And I know for me, especially when you're going to a NAS show where you're constantly have to stand and set up your animal, that the key is to practice. I know for me that a couple years ago I walked in the ring with a yearling milker that I don't think anyone in our family had tried to set up before, and I think that was the number one mistake. I was sitting there the whole time trying to keep my goat facing the right direction. And I think is that it's not only a reflection of your animal, but also it could be a reflection of yourself, you know, how much you're willing to put in the effort to make sure these goats are represented correctly.
Yeah, a little bit to add on to that. I think a huge difference is between dam raised kids and bottle fed kids, or, you know, kids you have on the lamb bar. Those two dispositions between those kids are drastically different. We bottle raise all of our kids, and so we walk into a pen and they're on top of us, you know, and there is a disadvantage to that. You know, you have a kid you're trying to set up and they're chewing on you, but you really have to look at your herd. And, you know, if you have bottle raised kids, a lot of times they're a lot more laid back, you know, have a lot better disposition, they're sweet, they know what human touch is. And so it's more so getting them to stop chewing on you, to stop, you know, turning their head back. A lot of times they stand still, you know, not all the time. You have it, you know, you have exceptions, but with dam raised kids that you don't give a lot of attention to, it's a whole different story. And I would, you know, working with them the amount of times is going to be far more than you would with a bottle raised kid, you know. And it's another thing, you got to look at your herd, you got to look at what you do. And, you know, if you know you have a kid that's absolutely crazy, but, you know, beautiful, that you want to take out, you really, really have to put time in with them. Maybe go in the pen every day, put a collar on them, just walk them at first, drag them around, you know, or they drag you, whatever it may be, and getting them used to that, touching the rear legs, even if you don't set them up. Rear legs are a huge thing that when you're you know, you have a new goat that's never been touched. Rear legs are a big thing that they hate. They hate being touched. And, you know, you may get a bruised hand from reaching down there and getting kicked, but it's another thing. You look at each goat, which one, what their disposition is, and how often, you know, how crazy they are. If they're super crazy, work with them all the time.
Oh, no, 100%. And it's so true. I think through my herd, and I know there are does that are guaranteed going to behave well. They walk into the ring and they just know that, like, I need to shine now. This is my red carpet. I'm going to show myself off. And then I have other does who I would love for them to start walking and prancing around and looking beautiful, but they just put their brakes on. And so you're fighting them and they don't want to be in the ring. Or you have some that just want to go. And working with those does and realizing what their natural tendency is goes a long way into figuring out, is this a doe that I can just literally put a show collar on her and she goes, tell me what to do, I'll do it. Or is this a doe that we're going to have to walk around and walk around and walk around, because you need to learn that you're walking at the pace I'm setting. We're not walking at your pace because your pace is too fast. And so it definitely is individual, but as you guys both said, working with them, making sure, I think one of the biggest things is making sure your kids are comfortable being led on a collar. For so many people, the first time out of the barn for a show is when they're raking their animals, in terms of like breaking them to walk, or this is the first time they have a collar on. And if you're going into the show ring with the exception or expectation that this is your training ground, that's one thing. But if you're going into the show ring and you are thinking that you want the judge to truly evaluate the animals and you want to be competitive with these animals, but they're not walking, it's doing everybody a disservice. You don't want them to have to be evaluated that way, and you don't want to have to drag them across the ring. So putting a collar on, pulling them out, even for a few minutes, it's not going to be, it's going to definitely help you in the long run. With that, I kind of want to just move on to our next question. And that is, there are certain maneuvers that you have to do in the ring, whether it's doing side-by-side comparisons, switching sides, even at the more basic level, or changing places in the ring. And can we kind of talk about very quickly, because I know there's a lot we could get into here, but for new people, I guess, what are your tips and tricks on how to do maneuvers, at the very basic level, for those who are entering a ring and all of a sudden the judge is like, can you walk these two does together? And I want to see them do a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, a huge, huge thing with maneuvers is being graceful and going slow. Walking fast, as we've all stated before, does the goat a huge disadvantage. When you have those maneuvers, the side-by-side, you know, they're comparing the front end assembly and how they track on their feet and legs, you know, and the rear udder and the discussion and the rear legs, you know, that's what the judge is looking at. And if you're walking too fast, you're hiding those qualities and really accentuating or highlighting those, you know, defaults of the goat. And so it's a huge thing to know the maneuvers. Maneuvers are probably one of the simplest things you'll learn. You know, once you do it, you do it one or two times and you get the gist of it. The huge thing is looking at people who, you know how to correctly do those maneuvers and copy them, you know, work at it. Just go out and grab your goat and make sure, you know, a thing when I show is switching sides. It's so, so simple, but doing that in an elegant way, a graceful way, makes a huge difference. I don't even know how to explain it, but it does. And, you know, when you take those turns with your goats, go out in a wide circle and come back around. Don't cut the circle short. You know, that another huge disadvantage. I've seen so many people do that. And, you know, they're just trying to get back in the line as quick as possible. But these maneuvers were created to highlight your doe and highlight your animal. You know, a lot of times when the judges are doing this, they pull out two animals side by side because you're most likely, you know, competing for who places higher, whether that's first or, you know, middle of the class, whatever it may be. These maneuvers are made to compare the animals and, you know, see the advantages of one and, as I said, compare the two. And when you move fast, it really does put a disadvantage on your doe, and the judge just isn't able to clearly see your doe the way that they could. You know, making sure that when you turn away from the judge so the goat can, or the judge can see your goat at all times. Simple things like that really, really do your doe justice, or your buck.
So that, I will say, guys, don't walk behind your goats, right? You just don't do it.
Yeah, definitely don't walk behind your goat.
Well, watching ringside and watching people perhaps walk behind their goats, and knowing how a goat is supposed to be shown, you pick up on the things people aren't supposed to be doing. So what have you seen that we need to stop ourselves doing? And obviously walking behind the goat is one. What else are there, like, other no-nos that we shouldn't be doing, Hope?
So I would say, if I touched on the one, I mean, walking on the right side of the animal, I feel like that's something that people usually learn from day one, especially they drill that into you in showmanship. But another thing that I've seen, and it may not be, I think it's more for herdsmanship, is the facial expressions that people make in the ring. And I think that
I feel attacked.
I think that there should be a certain, you know, sometimes, you know, things are funny in the show ring and it's okay to do that. But especially when the judge is, you know, placing the animal. And I will admit, I did this when I was younger, and I have learned to, you know, get a more professional stance on this. But I think that when you're in the ring and the judge is, you know, placing your animal, I think it's a very respectable and notable thing to, you know, just keep a straight face, or, you know, if you want to be happy for the person in front of you. But I think things like that are, you know, things that I've seen a lot of, but maybe some people should change.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You see it too often, or you see people that just straight up tell the judge how they feel that their disagreement with the placings is. I mean, it's just the way it is. And that kind of leads us right into it. Pet peeves. Let's hear them, because we all got them. So whoever wants to pipe in first, biggest pet peeves, let's go.
Oh, gosh. I guess I'll delve into this, or, you know, put myself out first. But following along the lines of Hope, you know, both of us years ago, we let our emotions show, you know, and it happens. You know, there may be a doe that you are showing that you absolutely love and think, you know, should have been placed higher. But a huge thing is the respect towards, you know, other exhibitors. And, you know, you just see kind of like the hatred towards, and it's not everyone, it's not common among the dairy goat industry. You know, the dairy goat industry is one of the best industries to be in. But you have those people who, you know, show that dislike, or, you know, their disagreement towards what just happened. And, you know, that hatred kind of follows out of the show ring and into the industry itself. You know, they start to dislike someone because of how good their animals are, how, you know, consistent their herd is. And instead of showing a respectful side of it and, you know, admiring and noticing that someone has put in the effort and has had this success, you know, they've done it themselves. You can't go out and within a year have this phenomenal herd. You know, some people buy into it, yeah, but to say that you've bred, you know, these generations of excellent does or champion does is a very, very hard thing to do, and very, very few herds can do it. And I think it's a huge thing to show respect towards that. And, you know, we've all been in that place where we've been on a lower level and, you know, not had quite the per se quality of goats that we have now. And so we've been in the place where we've had, you know, does that were maybe towards the end of the class, or does that just couldn't compete with the other herds. And showing a dislike for people who were already at that level, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, me and Hope are at the top level right now. We've done pretty good with what we've had over the years. And, you know, we have placed higher than we had previously. And you see a little bit of that hatred from people, especially within youth. Seeing adults hate on youth is probably my biggest pet peeve. Yeah. I probably should have started off with that. To hate on a child is, oh my gosh, one of the like lowest levels you can swoop to. I don't understand how people do it. You know, youth, obviously they're the next generation, you know, the future for ADCA. And I think that you should promote them and, you know, help them, assist them, and congratulate them where congratulations should be shown. And so I think that people who have that hatred, they just, it's really, it's not shown often in the industry. You know, it's not, I would say within, you know, 1-2% of the industry, but it is there. And I think that those people should really take a step back and see that we've all started at the same level and we all want to get to the same level. And so it's everyone on their own journey, finding, you know, genetics, going through their herd, making hard cuts, implementing a feeding program that works best for them. You know, we've all been in the same position, maybe different situations, but we're all trying to get to the same place. I'll see if Hope has any different pet peeves, but those are definitely some big ones of mine.
I could see where that pet peeve definitely came in. I do have that one as well. But one of the ones that's a little lower is when exhibitors, and even the older exhibitors, when they're just rough with their animals in the show ring, I think that goes for a lot of people. It's just one of those things when you're trying to show your doe or buck off to the best of its advantage, and you know, you're like roughhousing your doe, maybe you're pulling the chain too hard, or maybe you're tickling her down too much. You know, it's just one of those things that it misrepresents you and the animal. And I think that's definitely one of my biggest pet peeves.
Yeah, one of mine is, well, I have many people that have been listening for a long time know that my biggest pet peeve when showing is when exhibitors are super late to the ring. Like, you know, this is their class, they had time to prepare their animals and get them in the ring, but we're always waiting on them, right? Those are the people that really irritate me at shows. Another one, like I mentioned earlier, is when exhibitors follow too close and their goat's biting at my goat, biting at its tail. It's always an enjoyable experience. Danielle, what are some of yours?
I don't necessarily, I guess this is probably more my soapbox than a pet peeve. And this is more showmanship than ringside behaviors, but it does apply to how you are in the ring. Is so often when I am practicing showmanship with youth, particularly, they are making too small of circles when they are maneuvering their animals, when they're switching places, when they are adjusting their goat and putting her back in line, when they're doing these side-by-side maneuvers, and they are doing these really tight circles. It just hurts your doe. It does not make her look graceful and elegant, as we've talked about. And so I always find, first of all, it's usually a make or break when you are in my showmanship ring and I am evaluating you, because there's an exhibitor who just is able to maneuver their does more properly in those circles and keep that animal looking beautiful and not making her tight in that front end assembly, or scrunching her up for a little bit. They're just moving her at this beautiful natural pace. And so you're seeing these animals that way. And I just feel that we're not, as exhibitors, we're not aware of how they look when we're trying to do that. And we're so worried or occupied about getting back in line and putting her where she's supposed to be, that we forget that in that movement, if we're rushing her, it's just going to hurt her. So it's more of something I've seen, and I know I've been guilty of it a few times too with some of my animals, but it's something I see very like commonly when everyone is working with their animals and maneuvering them in lines. Mm-hmm. Is the circles are never big enough.
Yeah, following back, I agree completely with you, Danielle, on the circles. That's a huge, huge thing that judges knock for in showmanship, and even in the open show, it does put your dough at a disadvantage. But going back to what John said about one of his pet peeves was showing up late. You know, me and Hope have shown in at shows that had six rings, you know, maybe broken up among 2 days, so three rings each. And it does put us at a little bit of an advantage that there's two of us, plus, you know, our parent. Well, my dad will not step foot in a ring, but my mom, you know. And we have a couple friends that, you know, are very good showmen. But there's been times where we show up with, you know, a few less than we intended and more goats than we intended. And so it's kind of a responsibility that you put on yourself. I remember one year we were showing, and it was at a state fair, and an exhibitor absolutely would not let anyone else show his doe. He was in one ring and he had another doe having to go into the other, and he knew plenty of people there. This was a state fair with breeders who had been in the industry for 20, 30, 40 years, and he wouldn't allow anyone else to touch his doe. And so the other ring was sitting there for probably 10, 15 minutes. And it was, you know, because the other ring, I believe it was a best in show lineup. And so it really, really put, you know, a pause on the mm-hmm. the flow of the show. That kind of rhymed. But I think it's very important that if you're going to bring a huge amount of does, if that's the reason you're late, to have someone people with you, or if you don't have that, to have, you know, someone ringside and be like, you know, if this class runs over, can you go grab that doe? Can you have her up here? Can you walk her into the ring? You know, and that's just something that's going to happen. You know, that's a risk you have to take in bringing so many animals to a show like that. And then just also being aware of time management, knowing when a show starts. You know, I would rather be up at the ring 10 minutes early than 10 seconds late. It's one of those things. Don't advise you to be 10 minutes early, but you know, it's definitely a huge thing with being late or just not allowing other people to show your animals. It really does a disservice to the people who are there on time and who take it seriously.
Yeah. And that time adds up, you know, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here, like it adds up. And all of a sudden, hey, why did the show run until 8 PM? Well, because people weren't allowing it to run fluidly. So, yep, I agree. All right, let's wrap up. And I want to ask this final question because, you know, we're all business here. We're talking about, you know, all these things. And we're probably going to end up having to have a part two here because this has been a great episode. But what's your favorite part about showing goats? So easy as that. What makes you guys want to do this? What's your favorite part?
I'd say my favorite part isn't even the showing aspect. It's everything before that leads up to the showing. And I mean, that could include implementing the correct genetics into the breeding program and seeing your goat has reached its best potential in the ring. And that does not really mean it has to go grand or even first in its class, because as we've stated before, I think it's a very notable thing when we as breeders and exhibitors can acknowledge that there is a better goat and respect when our own goat gets beat by a more, you know, correct goat. But knowing that the animal competed and was where you wanted it to be and that you made the right steps as a breeder to get there. And, you know, even on the chores aspect, I think that those are such a key to doing well and that I really don't mind myself. But putting in the work and making sure that we are, you know, using good rations of feed and hay and just knowing that the 4 a.m. work is paying off. And as for showmanship, I think it's everything I said and before and more. You know, I remember when me and Faith were younger and this was when we were trying to be in charge of the herd and, you know, doing chores and getting the goats ready, packing the trailer and just getting everything ready before the show. And in hindsight, you know, we were told to start preparing a week in advance, but you know how kids are. We had schoolwork, homework, chores, extracurricular activities, and we waited till the night before. And I feel like that was definitely a trend that me and Faith had. But it was almost like there was an excitement in getting ready. You know, I remember that feeling when we would quiz each other over the scorecard while we were clipping, you know, rear udder arches at 4 in the morning with a flashlight. And I think it's that passion passion that we have from such a young age, and implementing that work, that into our work ethic, and being able to show that off in showmanship or even the open show, that's so rewarding. So for me, it's all the before, all the hard work and the long hours finally paying off.
Yeah, I mean, everything Hope said as well. Alongside that, with me, me and Hope have been in this industry our whole lives, born into it, and we haven't known anything else. Being able to really grow our herd in our own way from a young age, the best doe in my barn right now, I bred her dam 6 years ago. And to see that, a decision that I made based on the knowledge I already had at such a young age is huge. Not very many people can say that, they bred, per se, a quality of animal at that age and was able to understand the genetics and the confirmation, the correct confirmation. And that's a huge, huge thing. And as everyone says, the experience that this has really provided for me, myself, is huge. I've went to places, visited places that I know dang well I would not have visited otherwise. Me, Hope, and our parents made the trek out to Oregon this year for nationals, and Kentucky to Oregon. That's a big, big trip. And I'm extremely grateful, first of all, to my parents for that, to have sacrificed to go all the way out just for us. Really, I think it's improved, my writing capabilities, the way that I speak in front of crowds, as odd as it sounds. It's just given me advantages that I know I wouldn't have otherwise. And just incredibly thankful for my parents and my grandfather for getting me involved in this. And I've really grown as a human, the animals. And I certainly wouldn't change it any other way, even through the downsides of it that we all have with them. Certainly at this point would not change it. And I don't think I ever would.
Wonderfully said.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful spot to wrap it up. Ladies, if anybody wanted to find out more about your herd or your family, where can they find that info?
So we have a farm page on Facebook called Shady Lawn Dairy Goats. It's not Shady Lawn Farm. Someone created an account under Shady Lawn Farm. That's not us. But under Shady Lawn Dairy Goats, that's our Facebook page. It's where we're most active. But we do each have our own individual Facebooks. Mine's under Faith Hitch. Hers is under Hope Hitch, obviously. And then when you go to the Facebook page with Shady Lawn Dairy Goats, there's a link in the information or bio or to our farm page, which is under Weebly, I believe. And then as well, Hope and I recently have been doing showmanship clinics to kind of help out to the youth who need it and can't necessarily, come to a national show or a state fair near us. So we have those resources available as well. But if there's ever anyone, adult or youth, who are in need of help, absolutely send us a message on our messengers, on our private or under our farm one. That one is ran by my mom. But either one will be more than happy to help with anything that they need.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you both for joining us. Danielle, if people wanted to find us on the old interwebs, where can they go?
You can find us at dairygoatpodcast.com. We are on Facebook by searching Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Ringside Podcast, as well as on TikTok. There is an adorable little video from last week of John's daughter Alice recognizing that while the Nubian and change was scary at first, it actually was something that is amazing. But you can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to leave us a rating and a review and subscribe. It really helps us out and we appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And Alice might have been crying about the Nubian, but now I am. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.